Introduce Mary Ruth because I had met her before, and that's so much easier when you know who you're going to introduce. Hi, Amy. I first met... That was terrible. I apologize. I first met Mary Ruth at the Southeast Regional Delegates get-together a little over 2 years ago, and the thing that struck me is her bubbly personality. I mean, I've probably never met anybody that is so enthusiastic, that loves this program, that is just so full of gratitude for the program. We were sitting here trying to talk. We were both comparing how nervous we were, and I know she's beat me hands over, but Mary Ruth has also never been known to be at a loss for words, and she couldn't talk. She just couldn't get anything out, and she said, "You can tell people you've seen me one time at be at a loss for words." I thought that was kind of cute, and I will report this. So. And the other thing that she taught me and impressed upon me was how to say her home state of Tennessee. So with that, I'll give you Mary Ruth R. from Morristown, Tennessee.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mary Ruth Rooker, and I'm from Morristown, Tennessee. I already told you my name. I don't want you to think that I've got notes on this, all kinds of stuff that I'm going to talk to you about, because I ain't. Okay? But I do have some things that I think it might be interesting to you, and it may not be, but that's okay, too. Because I'm going to do whatever God wants me to do whenever He decides to take over. So until He takes over, I'm going to tell you this. You know, I'm supposed to share my experience, my strength, and my hope with you. My experience was I was a crazy lady. I found Al-Anon, and I'm well, so I can go sit down. And the last time I tried that, they told me I couldn't do that, so I guess you're not going to let me get away with it either. I'm going to tell you that the way I got qualified for Al-Anon. I am the step-granddaughter of, and I wrote all this down so I wouldn't forget any of it. I am the step-granddaughter of, the ex-wife of, the wife of, the mother of, the ex-mother-in-law of, and the stepmother of. These people, some of them who are practicing, some of them who are recovering, and some of them who never got the opportunity to recover. So I qualify for this program really good. You know, I as I stay in here, I begin to learn some of this. I didn't know that my step-grandfather was an alcoholic. But I knew there was something wrong with my stepmother. But I didn't know what it was. I think she had the ism. She just didn't drink, but boy, she was very negative. But anyway, I'll talk about that in a little bit. Now, I cannot compete with Juanita. She has 9 kids. I have 3 kids and one stepkid, so I only have 4 kids. So I mean, you know, I can't compete there. My kids are. I'll tell you this, and then when I start to tell you my story, you will understand some of the terminology that I use. I have a son and a daughter and another son. My oldest son is 35. My daughter is 34. My youngest son is 28. Okay. And I've got 7 grandchildren, and that's all that's on this paper. So now I guess it's about time for God to take over. Whew. I grew up never fitting in anywhere. I always was different. I came to this program being different. My first meeting was a meeting like this. It was people in there just like you. Okay? And I thought, and I knew I was different, and I knew I didn't belong in there, but they said I did. You know, I had been married to 2 alcoholics, not one. And I knew that I didn't belong in there. And I'm going to tell you why I didn't belong in there, and then you can decide for yourself. I was the only little black woman in Al-Anon. It was a room full of people just like you. And all my life, I had been been different. I was too light, my hair was too long, I was too something. So I just never was the right thing. I was too little, I was too loud, I was too whatever. So today I'm grateful that I am who I am. I'm grateful that I am the color that I am. Because you know what, I have to show y'all this and then you'll understand. You know, I get a suntan just like you do. So I just want to let y'all know I can get a suntan, you know, and you know, I was at one of my meetings the other day. I went to my home group meeting, and this girl said, I went to a roundup, and she said there were a lot of people there, but there wasn't anybody there like you. I said, excuse me, every one of them people down there was just like me. I said, the only qualification was that their life was affected by somebody else's drinking. That's the only thing. That's what you said when I got here. You didn't say I had to be anything other than my life had been affected. And sure enough, it had been affected. I didn't know that it had been affected. You know, I qualified for Al-Anon when I was 2 years old. I really did. My stepmother always said that I was a people pleaser at 2 years old. I would, and I'm an only child. I'll tell y'all that too. I'm an only child, and I know there's some only children in this room. So, you know, we are a unique group of people. You know, but we can die from uniqueness. If you don't know that, you can die from it. You know, because as long as you want to remain different, honey, you can be different. So, you know, I'm an only child, and my father died when I was 3 years old. My mother died when I was 14 months old. And she was trying to give me another little sister or brother or something, and so, and I don't say that to you know, for anybody to feel sorry for me. This is just the way it is. And my father decided that. My father always said this. He always said that my father had been married before he married my mother. He had married another woman, and she died. And then he married my mother, and he said if she died, then he would marry again because he wasn't going to be without a woman. So he married my stepmother. My stepmother was the kind of woman who she had been a school teacher, and she had worked all her life, and then she decided when she could no longer take care of herself, then she got married. Well, the only thing happened was she married my dad for him to take care of her. Well, what happened was he died, and he left her with his 3-year-old child, who was really in a bad place. Because, see, I thought even at that age, I thought that if my parents had loved me, they wouldn't have left me. So immediately at 2 years old, I started feeling alone. And when the kids would come to play with me, they'd play with my toys, and being an only child, I was selfish. And I'd take the toys, and they'd say they was going to leave, and I said, no, here, take them back. And I'd give them back to them. And I did that. I did that all the time. So at that age, I was a people pleaser. Well, I grew up in the time when there was such a thing as a two-holer. Now, some of you know what a two-holer is. And some of you don't. And if you don't, I'm not going to explain it. But I grew up in a time where there's a two-holer. And the first time that I remember that I decided that I wasn't going to say that I was sorry anymore was I was 7 years old. Now, you know, that's really young to decide. I'm not going to tell you I'm sorry. Well, at 7 years old, I asked my stepmother if I could go and visit my cousin, and she said yes. But she didn't mean that day. And I thought she meant that day. So I go to school, and I had to ride a different bus to go to my cousin's. And when my bus got home, I wasn't on it. Well, some of the kids said they saw me up at the two-holer. And they thought I had fallen in the two-holer. So with them thinking that I had fallen in the two-holer, they come to school, they look everywhere for me, they can't find me. Finally, it dawned on somebody that, well, maybe she's with her cousin. So I was with my cousin. So my mother came and got me. And in our household, we focused on everything that was negative. So I had done a big wrong. I mean, it was just absolutely wrong. So the next day when I went to school, I had to apologize to the class. I had to get up in front of the class, the teachers, everybody that looked for me. I had to tell them I was sorry. Well, I'm going to tell you something, people, I wasn't sorry. So, you know, why should I stand up and say I'm sorry to you and I wasn't sorry? So right then and right there, I said, I'm never, ever going to tell you I'm sorry and mean it. Now, I said, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. If you wanted something, if I did something or you did something and I thought it was my fault, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. But I didn't mean it. So I carried that. And in our household, I was a kid. Now, I know you've all heard this, that black people are supposed to have rhythm, that we're supposed to be able to skip and dance and all that stuff. Well, here's one, can't skip, can't dance, can't do any of it. I ain't got no rhythm, okay? I had to be taught how to skip. I'm not kidding you. I had to be taught how to skip. And in our household, even till the day my stepmother died, she referred to that thing. I always... You know, so-and-so taught her how to skip. This child could not skip. You know, that was that was the big deal in our household, was that I couldn't skip. Anything that was negative, that's what she focused on. You know, if I made two A's and a B, the B was what she focused on. And I didn't know that her life had been affected by her daddy. I didn't know that. He loved to drink alcohol. Well, she had a brother that loved to drink alcohol, too. And he used to say to us, when he'd get drunk, he'd say he had his eyes on us. And we went to his house and he got drunk and he'd say he had his eyes on us. They'd scooted us out of there and we went home. So I didn't know nothing about no alcoholism. So this was basically how it was with me. I could never do nothing to be good enough. I never was good enough for anything. When I got into high school, I tried to fit in. But you know, I was always the square block for the round hole. I never fit in anywhere. As I said, people didn't like me because of the color of my skin. I had long hair. I should have been darker, or my hair should have been shorter, or my hair should have been nappier, or something, or I should have been bigger. I was just a little old tiny thing. And, you know, I stayed a little old tiny thing for a long time, and I'll tell you about that in a little bit. But, I just never fit in anywhere. You know, I'm so grateful that when I come down on, you know what you told me? You told me you loved me. You told me that I belonged here. And you told me to keep coming back. And I was so glad to find one place that people loved me and accepted me just the way I was. I didn't have to do nothing if I didn't want to. You know, it was up to me if I wanted to change. If I didn't want to change, that was okay. So anyway, these were some of the things that happened to me as a child. Well, I grew up, and I met this sweet old boy. I really did. I met a sweet old boy, and he was in the military. And, oh, he was in the Special Forces. Now, you know, he had one of them green berets, and it sat on his head sideways, and Lord, I'm telling you, that was just the best thing I had ever seen. So, you know, and here I am, I'm about 15, and he was going with this girl. And I didn't like this girl, and I said to some of my girlfriends, I'm going to take him away from her. I don't want her to have him. You know, today I wished I'd let her keep him. I'm serious. I'm serious. I wished I'd let her catch him, because I'm going to tell you, I met this guy, and, you know, then I thought I was in love. I really did. But you know what I did? I married him so I could get away from my mama. I jumped out of the frying pan into the fire, and it was blazing hot. He was an alcoholic he'd been an alcoholic. I didn't know he was an alcoholic. I knew he acted a little funny, but see, those are the kind of people I always was attracted to. You know, all this crazy stuff they do, I wouldn't do it. I watched them do it. You know, I said I was crazy enough with, and so I wouldn't drink. And I was scared to death of my stepmother, so I knew I better not never come home drunk. Because she'd kill me. She'd beat me to death. You know, because, I mean, I got enough good beatings as it was. And I just didn't, so I was scared of her more than anything else. So I wouldn't do any of this stuff. I just sort of watched them. So anyway, I met him and I married him. I mean, I don't know why I did, other than to say it's, you know, I married him because I was, but I do know why I married him because I was going to make him home. He wasn't going to drink no more because he had a wife to come home to. And you know, in the military, they needed to work. But, you know, they told me that if the government said if they wanted him to have him a wife, they'd issue him one. So, you know, I thought, I'm going to fix him. You know, I'm going to give him a good home, and I'm gonna do all this stuff. Well, you know, I got married, and boom, here comes the first child. You know, I mean, right away. You know, I finished high school, and then when I was 19, I married him. I was a little over 19, and by the time I was 20, I had my first child. And you know, I didn't know what happened, and wasn't 18 months later, I had another one. And I started telling these doctors, look, I don't want any more kids. I don't want any more kids. Look, I don't want any more kids. The doctor said, wait, you got to have this one. And after you have this one, then we'll talk about you not having any more kids. So I said, okay. So I married him. We had two kids. Like I say, my son was born. And then my daughter came along. And the early part of the years, he still drank. I remember one of the things about when I had my daughter, and Juanita made me remember this. I was in the hospital, and all these men were coming in there, and they was bringing their wives flowers and all this stuff because they were just so happy that they was having a baby. I saw my husband 2 days later. You know, he never even showed up. You know, and I was always wanting somebody else's husband because they always had this perfect life. You know, I had a friend who had, her husband was just Mr. Perfect. He really was. I don't know how he was because I didn't live with him, but from the outside, it looked perfect. All my life, I wanted to be like somebody else. I always wanted to have this perfect life. And when I married him, we was going to have this little cottage. We was going to have a fence around it, and we was going to have these kids, and we was going to have a dog, and we was just going to live happily ever after. Well, we had the kids. We never had the house with a fence around it. We had a dog, and he'd kick the dog to get back at me. Some of you understand that, you know. And his alcoholism just bloomed and bloomed and bloomed. And he would do crazy things, and I would do crazy things. The craziest things he would do, if I'd kept my mouth shut, maybe he might. But see, I didn't know how to keep my mouth shut. And, you know, he would, one of the things I thought about this, we were talking about restoring sanity. I lived with a crazy man that was a perfectionist, that if he found one dirty dish in the cabinet, he would take all the dishes out and I had to wash the dishes. And I was basically scared of him because he used me for a punching bag. You know, he punched me whenever, you know. And I was so sick and crazy that I thought that was the way it was supposed to be. And you know, my stepmother had told me, you make your bed, you lie in it. So I had made this bed, so I was going to lie in it no matter what. And I remember he would get in the car and I would get in the car and we'd go to parties and I wouldn't drink, but he would drink. Because see, you know, I'm crazy enough without drinking. And so I wouldn't drink. So he would fuss at me because I wouldn't drink. He'd fuss at me, and I'd get in the car and he'd be driving and we'd be. I remember one time that I promised God and anybody around that if he let me get out of his car for this crazy man, I wouldn't get in the car with him again if I knew he was drunk. We were driving home and he was on the sidewalk and off the sidewalk and on the sidewalk and off the sidewalk. And I'm sitting in there saying, please slow down, please slow down. Well, at that time, I didn't drive, so I was under his control, it really was. I was so consumed with him till whatever he wanted, that's what I did. I didn't know how to say no. I didn't think I had any choices. But this marriage continued with crazy things. One night he went and got the baby out of the bed and carried her around and kept talking about, oh, my baby girl, oh, my baby girl. And on like that, and I'd say, give her to me, and he wouldn't give her to me. And finally, I was so afraid he was going to hurt her, I would run out of my house and run up to my neighbor's house and said, you took him and got him drunk and he's down there at the phone now. Would you go down there and get my child away from him because I'm afraid he's going to hurt her? He walks down, he comes down there and says, "Ma'am, give her her child." And me looking like, and made me look like I was a fool. He handed me the baby. Now, I'd done tried for 3 hours to get him to hand me this child, and he wouldn't do it. So, crazy things like that. I didn't know what to do or what not to do, because I tried everything. We lived in a state of turmoil all the time. We lived in a state, I lived in fear. People knocked on the door, and I was afraid to open the door because I didn't know what was on the other side of the door. So me and these two kids would go in the bedroom and close the door, and I'd tell them we was playing a game. We was playing a game, but it was an insane game, but I didn't know who was at the door, so I wouldn't open the door. People would call, and I wouldn't answer the telephone. All kinds of things like that I was doing. I was beginning to get real crazy. I was screaming because I killed one minute and I love him in the next. If he came in screaming and hollering, then I'd scream and holler. And then I'd feel guilty because I screamed and hollered, and then I'd take the kids and we'd go over here in the room and I'd love them a whole lot. And this was the kind of environment that they started growing up in. And we would have all kinds of arguments, all kinds of fights. I never hit him back. Today I suffer from a bad back because he shoved me from as far as from here to that door, and I landed in front of the sink with my arm stretched out, and I hurt my back. And I'm so sick, when I go to the hospital, they ask me what happened, and I said I failed. I didn't have sense enough to say that he did this to me. Because if I said he did it to me, they'd have put him in a stockade. He would have been in trouble. Well, I didn't want him to be in trouble. I was in trouble, but I didn't want him to be in trouble. And this kind of marriage went on for about 12 years. Just one thing after another. One time he came home and told me, and I was so stupid, I believed it. He came home and told me that the military, he had been overpaid for a number of years. They took his whole paycheck. And I believed it. I believed they took his whole paycheck. Well, they ain't going to take your whole paycheck. But I believed that he did. And, you know, later on I got to thinking, now, you know, this don't sound right. So I went and got a job. You know, I'm going to help him. You know, I enabled him because I went and got a job and I was going to help him. You know, and when it come time to pay the light bill had been being on the money to pay the light bill. And it dawned on me, hey, he's been paying the light bill all along. You know, why not let him pay it now? So I quit working. So I just quit working and stayed at home. Then I went and I thought, well, maybe that'll be what he needs. Because if I was away from home, he would have come home. If I had dinner ready when he got there, he'd come home and eat. That's what he would say. But he never would come home. He'd say, if you don't argue when I come home, I'll come home. Well, I'd get dinner ready. I would say, I'm not going to argue. Whatever he said, I tried it. Well, people, nothing worked. I mean, nothing. And I kept doing this over and over. So, see, I had no problem with step two. I needed to be restored back to something. Well, after about 12 years, and I tell it like this, He fell in lust with this woman, and he decided that he wanted her, and he didn't want. By that time, I'd had my third child, because there's 7 years between my 6 years between my daughter and my youngest son, and I had had him by that time. I had something. Some of you women will understand this. I had something called the empty nest syndrome, and after I had those first two, I said I never was going to have any more. And along about the time my daughter got about 5 years old and she was getting ready to go to school, I had to have a baby. I wanted a baby so bad. If I saw a baby, I wanted to run up and grab it out of somebody else's arms. Well, I got pregnant and I lost that one, and then I had my last child because I always wanted four children. So anyway, long about the time that this little boy was 4 years old, that's when my husband fell in lust with this other woman and decided he's going to leave us and go to her. Well, I'm so sick. He wasn't much of a father, but I thought a half of a father was better than no father at all. because I had grew up without a father. So I wanted him to stay. I mean, no matter, I wanted him to stay. Today, I'm glad he didn't stay. I'm truly grateful that he didn't stay. But I wanted him to stay because I wanted him to be a father. Well, he wasn't even a father when he was there. It was always, I did all the things. I have been a Cub Scout person. I've been a Brownie person. I have been a, I would have coached the football team if they'd let me. You know, I've been room mothers. I've been PTA. I've been everything that I was supposed to do so that for my children. I thought I was supposed to do all this stuff. So I was in there doing all this stuff. And it was, I was just real sick. You know, and I just felt like if I didn't do it, nobody else could do it. But I never thought I could do it good enough. Now, that's really sick. So, but anyway, this marriage broke up. And after this marriage broke up, I said that I was never, ever, and don't never say never, ever, okay? I'm never, ever going to marry again, and I'm never, ever going to marry an alcoholic. Okay? Well, this is what happened. I got another one. You know, and I met this guy. Oh, and he was just wonderful. He was just, you know, I fell in love with this guy almost instantly. He was a real sweetheart. He really was. But I said, I'm not marrying you. I got to see how you're going to act with my kids, because I just wasn't going to put my kids through. They'd already had a father that was a nut and had abused them and me too, so I wasn't about to marry somebody like that. So I thought, well, I'm not going to marry another alcoholic. So I met this guy, and we dated for a year. And you know, we went to clubs, and we'd order a drink. You know, when I'd go to the club, my drink would be a rum and a Coke. That's what it was, rum and Coke. And I'd let it sit there and water down and never drink it. You know, I just get something in my hand. And because I tell you what, people, I have something called drunk knees. You take two drinks and your knees tell you you're drunk and you don't drink no more. So, you know, that's the way it was with me. So I met this guy and we started dating. We dated for a year and oh, he was wonderful. And, you know, I was the kind of gal that liked flowers and cards and he did that kind of stuff for me, you know. He'd take me out to eat and all those wonderful things that I wanted my husband to do, because I'd seen my girlfriend's husband do that for her. And I fell in love with this guy. And we were married. We got married. We dated for a year. And we were married for 6 years. And he didn't drink. And he tells it this way, that he stiff-armed it for that long, and his arms gave out, and he got drunk. And people, when he got drunk, guess who got crazy? He was, now, I have to tell you about the alcoholic in my life. He is he's 6 feet tall. He's a teddy bear. He's the kind of alcoholic that if he sits in the chair and he gets drunk, that's where he stays. If he comes in and he lays down right there, that's where he stays. He never bothered me, he never hit me, he never done anything to me, except he drove me crazy with saying, honey, I love you. One night, he was drunk, and I'm crazy, and he's in the bedroom, and he says, honey, come here, and I go in there, and he says, I love you, and I say, I love you too, and I go back and sit down to watch television, and 5 minutes later, he calls me and tells me to come in there, and I go in there, he says, honey, I love you, I go back, sit down. He does this for about 15 times. I don't have sense enough to know that I can go sit down, don't have to go in there. He's not going to say anything any different. You know, but I didn't have sense enough to know that he wasn't going to say anything any different. Now, that's crazy. You know, one time would have been enough. But he did. He told me he loved me, and I knew he loved me. So, but what happened was I became the abuser. I became the person who was going to, you know, and I weighed 110 pounds. That's all, 110 pounds. And one day, and I had to make my amends to him because he heard me tell it in my story one night. One night he got drunk. He was piled up in the dirty clothes in the basement, laying there, minding his own self's business. He wasn't bothering me. I saw him laying there, and I went crazy. And I beat, and I kicked and I beat and I kicked and I beat and I kicked till I couldn't do it anymore. The next morning he got up. He said, "I'm so sore." And he started rubbing himself and he said, "Did I fall down?" I said, "Yes, you fell down." He fell down. He didn't fall down. I just beat him. And after that, because I knew that something had to change. But it wasn't that I had to change. He had to change. So I took him, literally took him to his first AA meeting. Well, it was upstairs. He had been drinking. And here I go, and I'm 110 pounds, and I take him up there and sit him down in the chair. And I sit down right beside him because I'm not going to leave him because I want to know something. I want him to do something for him, not for me, because ain't nothing wrong with me. You know, it's normal for you to beat your husband up. It's normal for you to scream. You know, it's normal for you to be riding down the road and you see a car and you say it's blue and he says it's black and have those kind of crazy arguments. We had crazy arguments about things that wasn't even important. Before he started drinking, we'd argue about if I said that was a white shirt, he'd say, if he said it was a white shirt, I'd say, no, it's cream. Because I couldn't agree with him. It just couldn't be that way. And so, it was, you know, we had gone through all this kind of crazy stuff. So anyway, it was my job to see that he got sober. It was my job. I was supposed to make sure he got sober. I couldn't get the first one sober, but I thought I could get this one sober. Or I thought I could do something. I didn't really know what I thought, but I knew something had to change. And I said to him, "This has got to change." Well, he thought I meant that we was going to get a divorce, because I don't recall telling him that we were going to get a divorce. I don't think I ever said that. But we went to this meeting, and there was a whole bunch of people in there, and we sat down and they talked to him, and they come around his turn, and he said he was an alcoholic. And when he said he was an alcoholic, I started crying. I don't know why, but I thought, well, maybe something's gonna. So I started crying. They asked me if I'd have anything to say, and I said no, I didn't say nothing. So after the meeting, the lady said to me, she said, I don't know if this is gonna work for him. That's exactly the way she said it. I don't know if it's gonna work for him, but there's a program for you, and it's called Al-Anon. So see, the people in AA got me to Al-Anon. They gave me a telephone number, and they told me to call it. And I called it. Well, he kept on drinking. I called it. I went to Al-Anon. I left him alone. They told me to work on me. Well, first of all, I'll tell you why I went to Al-Anon. Now, this is why I went. I went to get the recipe. There is a recipe. There's got to be a recipe. You know, I went there for you people to tell me, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this, and he's going to stop drinking. Well, you know, I was so sick that every time they'd say, keep coming back, I thought, the next time I go, they're going to give me the recipe. You know, that's what I thought. But you know what? You didn't give me no recipe. You know, you kept telling me, you told me, you said, I didn't cause this, and I can't control it, and I can't cure it. And I thought, and you know, you told me I had to work on me. Well, I kept telling you there ain't nothing wrong with me. You know, if he stopped drinking, we'd be fine. Because, see, I told the psychiatrist when he finally did go into treatment, I told him that I had a perfect marriage. The psychiatrist told me I didn't have a perfect marriage. I said, I did too. I said, you didn't live in my house. I said, to me, a perfect marriage was nobody was knocking me down. Nobody was verbally abusing me. Nobody was doing any of that stuff. I said, the first marriage, I got verbally abused. I got beat up. I said, so he didn't do nothing but get drunk and say, I love you. I said, so I had a perfect marriage. You know? But they told me I didn't. So I said, well, that's your opinion and this is mine. And so, you know, me and the psychiatrist never could agree about anything because, you know, he and I just didn't see eye to eye. But anyway, after I'd been in Al-Anon almost a year, I remember before I tell you this, I was going to a meeting one night. I'd been in Al-Anon maybe 6 months, And he said, "You're going down there telling everybody I'm a drunk." I said, "Honey, I'm not going down there telling anybody anything. Everybody already knows you're drunk." And total fright set in. I reached over and got my One Day at a Time book and went out the door. When I got in the car, I said, "Oh my God, he's going to get drunk." That was my words. Then I heard this little voice in the back of my head say, "What if he does? What are you going to do about it? Why don't you go on to the meeting?" I cranked the car, went on to the meeting. When I come back, he was right there where he was. He didn't go get drunk because he didn't want to go get drunk. Because, you know, I soon learned that it didn't have anything to do with what I said, what I didn't say. He has a disease, and it's called alcoholism. You know, today I'm grateful he has that disease called alcoholism. I truly am. Because, you know, because he has that disease called alcoholism, I found you people. It gave me a program that I cannot live without. You know, one of the things that happened to me when I was married to the first alcoholic was I sat on the steps with a loaded shotgun. I had the shotgun, okay? Because he had lied to me so many times, I couldn't take the lying anymore, so I sat on the steps with a loaded shotgun. I was going to kill him if he came in. But he didn't come home. God took care of me. God has always been taking care of me. I didn't know he was taking care of me. But I was getting sick and tired of all the lies, of all the things that he was doing. So I thought I'd just get rid of him and me and these kids. And I would have crazy thoughts like that. You know, one night I thought about just boiling some oil, getting as hot as I could get it, and scalding. So see, I have no problem with step two, because I was crazy. I really was. And as I was saying, anyway, the second alcoholic came, decided one day he's going to, this is when he reached his bottom. He gets up, gets dressed in his best leather jacket, his best boots, his best pants, and I'm at work, and I can't do anything about it, and I've been in Al-Anon a while, and I go home for lunch, and he's not there. And I think, "Oh God, where is he?" And this voice said, "Wherever he is, he'll be okay. You got to go do what you got to do. You got to go back to work." So I go back to work, and every so often I'd think about it, and then I was so busy at work, I couldn't function on think about him that much. So when I got home, I figured he wasn't going to be there. When I got home, he was sitting there, and I said, "Where's the car?" And he said, "I don't know." I said, "Where's the car?" So finally he thought about where the car might be. And that night, that particular night, that's when he reached his bottom. He asked me if I would call and get him into treatment. And 2 days, the day before that, it was on a, 2 days before that, on a Monday, and this was on a Wednesday, on a Monday, they had run this ad about, "Is your life being affected by someone else's drinking?" Now, you can't tell me that God wasn't in this plan. That 2 days before, I had seen that number, and I wrote that number down. I didn't know if I was going to use it, but I wrote it down. And 2 days later, he asked me to take him to treatment. And I took him to treatment, and that night, the God of my understanding was right with me all the time, because when I took him to this treatment center, I didn't know how to get there. I had no idea how to get there. And it's long about midnight or 1 o'clock. By the time we got everything together, it was about midnight. And I take him to this treatment center. And that night, there was a big sign that shone brighter than the brightest star in the heavens. And it had the name of the hospital. It was Peninsula. And it had the name on it. And it showed me exactly how to get where I needed to go. Now, people, that sign is not even where I saw that sign. That sign is not it. But when I came around the curve, that sign was there. That sign was there, and it pointed me in the right direction. So I know God works in my life. He worked that night. He's been working every day since then. He was working before that because he kept me sane enough to not do the things that I thought about doing. Because had I done those things, I could have been put away for life. And then my kids would have been, then they would have been by themselves for sure. But anyway, I got into Al-Anon, and I've been here a few 24 hours, and I had started, my sponsors, I have two wonderful sponsors, and they said, come go with me. Get in the car. And I'd say, what for? Oh, you just need to get in the car. So I got in the car, and I'd ride with them, and I'd listen to them, because they had good Al-Anon. And when I, if I ever grow up, I will be just like my sponsor. Because, honey, she's got the best program that I mean, she's not perfect, but she's got a good program. And that's who I want to be like when I ever get grown. I don't know when that's going to happen, but that's okay, too. But, you know, I went to Al-Anon, and I just kept going to Al-Anon, and he went to treatment. And believe it or not, the treatment worked for him, you know. And that's his business, because his alcoholism is not my business. That's his business. He has to do whatever he has to do to maintain his sobriety. And I have to do whatever I have to do to maintain my sanity. And that's going to Al-Anon meetings on a regular basis. I mean, not just whenever. I go to Al-Anon meetings when I don't feel like it, people. I go to Al-Anon meetings when I got a headache. Because you know what? Somebody told me that the only way I could keep this program was I had to give it away. And people, I'm selfish. I really am. Because I felt something that works for me. You know, when after I got in here and my sponsors kept dragging me to these places, my sponsor said to me, she was going to an Earl Service Committee meeting, and I was in the car with her, and she said, come on, you need to go in here. Well, before that, I had been going to a group, and we didn't have a group representative, and I went to a district meeting, and I come back and reported to them that we needed a group representative, and they said, since you're going, how about you being in? So I said, I didn't know I could say no then, but that's all right. I'm glad I didn't say no. So I was going to that. Then we were having an assembly, and so I walked in the AWSC meeting, and my sponsor was the chairman at that time, and I didn't know anything about chairman. I didn't know about delegate. I didn't know about none of that stuff. And I walked in there, and they were talking, and then somebody said that Mary Ruth's from District 3, and District 3 doesn't have a district representative. I think we ought to appoint her. So they appointed me. You know, everything I've got, I think I got through in service work was by osmosis. I'm serious, by osmosis. I was just sitting there, and I got it, you know. You know, I'm grateful that I got it. I really am, because that's where all my growth came the most, was through service, because then I really had to get in there and do what I needed to do. So after I did that, I did some other things in my area. I was a literature person. Oh, I love our literature. I love literature. I really do. It's what I needed when I got here to help me to find a program of recovery. You know, I'm always going to be recovering. Some days I don't recover as well. I'm not recovering as well as other days. You know, I don't want anybody to go away from here thinking that my life is perfect and that I ain't had no problems. Because right now I'm going to tell you about something. My daughter, my son got married, and he married a girl that she was old enough, she was almost old enough to be his mama. And I almost lost my son over that because I didn't approve of her. And I had to deal with not talking to my son for about a year. And finally we made amends, and I was in the Al-Anon program, but some things take longer for me. So but today we have a wonderful relationship. My daughter got married. And I don't know why she married this guy, but she married him, and he wasn't mean to her or anything. But I just knew that this wasn't the right guy for her. And one day she called me up. We had this big wedding, and it was really a big thing. And they stayed married about 7 years, and she called me up and said they were getting a divorce. Now, people, they had a friendly divorce. Now, I never heard of that before, you know, because I never was friendly with my ex-husband. You know, I got to where I could love him because he was a child of God. But I didn't like him. I mean, I'm sorry. I just did not like him. And I knew I wasn't going to be his friend. You know, when I think about it, the only wonderful thing happened was we had three kids. That was the wonderful thing, you know? So my daughter got divorced, and she's remarried. Now she married a guy that's a real nice guy. And they have I have a little granddaughter by her who is about 2 years old. And her and my oldest son are doing, my son lost his wife, and he's doing pretty good. I tell him every once in a while when he starts to talk about some of the things, because he is an adult child, and I tell him every once in a while, he went to a psychiatrist, he told me, and the psychiatrist told him he couldn't keep blaming his parents for how it was when he was growing up. I said, son, you could have gone to Al-Anon for free. You would not have had to pay for that. I said, you know. I said, because, you know, if you come down now, we're going to tell you. You can't keep blaming us for what happened. You know, I made my amends to him, and I said to him, son, I'm sorry for the way that I raised you, but I did the very best that I could with what I had to work with. Because I had to come to grips in terms of that with my stepmother, that she did the very best that she could. She couldn't do any better. She didn't know how to do any better. And when you don't know how to do any better, you can't do any better. And my son said to me, Mama, it was okay. And we were in the kitchen, he was at the kitchen table, and I turned around at the kitchen sink and I cried a little bit. Because he doesn't remember the things that I did, or he chose to forgive me for them. And I'm grateful for that today. And my daughter, I keep telling her, you know, she wants to run everybody's life. And she needs Al-Anon, but she don't think she does, so if she don't think she does, what can I do? You know, she knows it works because she came home from college one year and said, Mama, things are different here. Y'all ain't fussing. I said, that's right. I said, we're not fussing. I said, your daddy has a problem and I have a problem. I said, and we work it on a daily basis. And now I must tell you about my 28-year-old son who I did not allow to grow up and take responsibility for his own behavior. A year ago, my son got himself into some major trouble as a result of, I truly see the characteristics, and I think he's an alcoholic, but he doesn't think he is, and right now he's not doing, I don't think he's doing any of the things to further his disease, but he got himself into some serious business. I mean, real serious. He figured he didn't want a job, so he started selling drugs. And he sold drugs. And he wouldn't come around to see Mama, so I knew something was wrong. When they don't come around, something's wrong, people. So he was selling drugs, and he got caught. And I thought that I was going to die, because this was my baby. This was the last child that I could ever have. I went to court when I shared it at my area. We were having a discussion. I shared it with my area, and somebody said to me, they came up to me and said, you know, I had to go to court to see what they were going to do with my child. I've been there. You may want to think about doing that. And I said, today I can't do that. The day that they sentenced him was the day after Thanksgiving. We had Thanksgiving, and then it was the following. It was like on a Monday or Tuesday of the next week, they sentenced him. I heard the judge say, "I sentence you to 8 years." I thought I was going to die. My son went to Brushy Mountain. God works, people. I'm telling you, He works. My son had never been in trouble. He was 27 years old. He'd never really been in any trouble. He got down there, they gave him tests and seen that he was not, since he'd never been into trouble, they decided to put him into a boot camp. He went to a boot camp and stayed for 6 months. And he's back home. And I think he's doing okay. You know, I don't know for sure because he lives in his house and I live in mine. And I told some of you I have a 5-year-old granddaughter that I'm raising. This 5-year-old child belongs to this 28-year-old son of mine. When him and his wife got married, they got married. He didn't ask me if he could marry her. If he'd asked me, I'd have said no. I'm serious, people, because she was trouble. And they got married, and they had this beautiful granddaughter, the one I'm raising. And They got a divorce. Now, this was not a friendly divorce, people. She was obsessed with him, and she wasn't going to let go of him. And my granddaughter looks just like my son, and my son looks like me. And she started beating up on my granddaughter, and she was 3 years old. And I said, no way. You will not abuse my grandchild as long as I've got breath to breathe. So I go to court, and my son goes with me and tells the judge that he thinks the best place for his daughter is with me. So I have his child. I'm raising his child. At the very beginning, and I've had her almost 3 years, and at the beginning, after he came home, he wasn't spending much time with her. And before he went into prison, he wasn't spending much time with her. Today, he does spend every Sunday with her because that's what he chooses to do. But, honey, this program worked for me because when I left that courthouse and the judge had sentenced my baby to 8 years, if it had not been for the Al-Anon program, I don't know what I would have done. I kept hearing people say, this too shall pass. Let go and let God. Live and let live. I kept hearing the serenity prayer. And accept the things I can't change. I couldn't change this. People, I didn't cause this. I didn't cause him to go out there and do this. You know, one day I heard myself say, and I couldn't believe it, I said this. You know, he did the crime, he's got to do the time. And I thought, whoa. Honey, this is growth. When you're talking about somebody that you gave birth to, that you're going to turn loose and let them do what they have to do. And you know, today, I'm grateful this happened to him because he started growing up. He's not all the way there yet, but he started growing up and taking some responsibilities for his own self. I don't have to take responsibility for him anymore. I'm grateful for that. I'm so grateful that I don't have to take any responsibility for any of my children in their behavior. But I used to think that I had to. I thought the way my children act depended on me. I also thought the way my husband acted depended on me. You know, I used to lay out all my husband's clothes, and he used to tell me he was grown, that he could lay out his own clothes. Today, people, he lays out his own clothes. If he puts on a brown sock and a blue sock, it ain't me. It ain't me, people. You know, I didn't know that. You know, you told me, let him be responsible for his own self. You know, detach from him with love. Get off of his back. You know, work on yourself. Work the steps, the traditions. And you know, people, you can even apply the concepts to your life, too. You can apply every bit of it to your life. You know, when I first come in here, I thought, well, I'm only supposed to take the traditions and use them in the group. Honey, them traditions work in your own house. Now, if you don't think they do, take them and try them. You'll find out that they work. Because this whole program, not bits and pieces of it, this whole program works for you. Every bit of it works for you. You know, and as I stay in here and you know, my favorite thing now is service work. I've served my area every way that I possibly could for a while, and then my area decided that they wanted me to be the delegate for their area. So to me, that was an honor, and I went to conference, and that's where I met my friend out there, Sarah Jane. She was there my first year, and she took care of me. And then when it was my second year, along came Vicki. And, you know, I met so many wonderful people through this Al-Anon program. You know, I can't say enough about Al-Anon. There's no way. I mean, I could stand here and talk and tell you all about Al-Anon. But somebody told me that the best Al-Anon meeting, that the best way that somebody might learn about Al-Anon, or the best Al-Anon meeting that they may ever go to, might be me. And if I go to Al-Anon and I've changed, and somebody might want the Al-Anon program. They might want it. So that's all I can tell you. This program works for me. It works for you. One of the other things is that, you know, when, you know, I think the only difference between, now some people are like, some of you might be like this, but, you know, I think one of the differences between me and you is that if you cut me, Al-Anon comes out first, then blood and water. So my Al-Anon's in my blood. You know, there's some more of us that have Al-Anon in our blood. But God is through with me. I do want to thank you for letting me come to West Virginia. I've never been here before, and this is a beautiful place. I want to thank you for feeding me. I'm serious. Sarah Jane and I understand that's a little private joke. We went to conference and the food was awful, and, you know, we wanted good food, so, you know, you guys have good food. You know, I want to thank you for sitting there and smiling at me, and, you know, for all of you who told me it was going to be okay, you know, because without people like you, I can't be okay. You know, I can't even begin to be okay without people like you. You know, and I didn't share some of the pain for you to feel sorry for me. I shared some of the pain to let you know that Al-Anon is not a bed of roses. It has thorns. So remember that. And I always close with something, and I want to read this, and then I'm going to sit down. May you have enough happiness to keep you sweet, enough trials to keep you strong, enough sorrow to keep you human, enough hope to keep you happy, enough failures to keep you humble, enough success to keep you eager, enough friends to give you comfort, enough wealth to meet your needs, enough enthusiasm to look forward, enough faith to banish despair, enough determination to make each day better than yesterday. Thank you.